This is a special hour of Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. 1 year ago today.
The foreign minister has just tweeted that the country is under full-scale invasion by Russia. He says peaceful cities are under attack.
We are marking 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine, an invasion that Russian President Vladimir Putin justifies by arguing Ukraine belongs to his country. Ukrainians disagree.
He wants to believe that Ukraine is just part of Russia, but it is not. It has totally different nation, totally different country, totally different culture and history, and we're proud of it.
So proud that some Ukrainians stayed in their country despite the war, including Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Я скажу одне. Я залишаюсь тут, залишаюсь у Києві, не ховаючись, і нікого не боюсь.
Saying there, now I will say one thing. I remain here, I remain in Kyiv, I am not hiding, and I am not afraid of anyone. 365 days of war, of displacement, of uncertainty. While some stayed, others couldn't. Relocating to places like Massachusetts, they joined a diaspora here in the Commonwealth, more than 10,000 strong, living in two worlds at once.
So much is up in the air. So much is to be determined in terms of the next steps for them.
Months after relocating, those who left remain loyal to Ukraine, loyal to its values and its mission.
When you're free, you can do everything you want. You can change this world for better. But when you are not free, you just survive.
Sound there from Al Jazeera, the New York Times, and from our own coverage here on WBUR over the last year, including Ukrainians Olga Lizovska and Sofia Tarasuk, and Caroline Davis from Accentria, who's been resettling Ukrainian refugees in Massachusetts, all of whom we will hear from today. So 365 days, the war still continues. What comes next for Ukraine and its people? Well, let's begin with Congressman Jake Auchincloss, who represents the state's 4th Congressional District. He's also a Marine Corps veteran. Congressman, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
It's great to have you back. Thank you. And I just want to start, Congressman, by asking you what's on your mind today as we mark a year.
The example of the Ukrainian people fighting for freedom for a year now in conditions that beggar belief, and a complete commitment as the voice and vote of the people of Massachusetts to continue to support the people of Ukraine for as long as it takes, with whatever it takes, all the way through Crimea.
You said the phrase beggar belief, and that really caught me. The conditions that beggar belief, because you've served in theater, you know what the conditions of war look like. What does beggar belief about what we've seen, Congressman?
I served in theater with a platoon of well-trained, well-equipped Marines at my back. The Russians are terrorizing children. They're raping women. They're torturing men. They are committing war crimes at scale, and they are targeting civilian infrastructure intentionally to sow a demoralizing and paralyzing terror in the population, but it's not working. The Ukrainian people have a heart of a lion. And so I think we as Americans need to have the Ukrainians back for three reasons. One, it's the right thing to do. The Ukrainians are fighting on the front lines of the free world, and they need our help. And we as Americans got help of our own when we were fighting for our independence 250 years ago. Second, it's the smart thing to do. We've spent $110 billion, roughly about 12% of an annual defense budget in support of Ukraine. And for that, look at what we've gotten in return. We're on track to double NATO's border and deepen its unity. We have induced Germany and Japan and South Korea and the Eastern European states to increase their domestic defense spending, and we've cratered Russia's conventional military capacity. It's been a huge return on investment in terms of national security dollars spent. And third, it's the American thing to do. This is about supporting the rules-based international order that America helped architect after World War II and that has helped peace and prosperity spread to ever more people. And it's a fragile order that must be upheld at times with strength.
So we're speaking with Congressman Jake Auchincloss on the line. And I, you know, you said right thing to do, smart thing to do, American thing to do. And in that smart thing to do, you talked about the roughly $110 billion. We invited members of our texting group to send comments and thoughts and questions today. And if you're not a member of that group and want to join, you send the word Boston to 617-766-0382. Congressman, there were a number of people beginning to express concern and fatigue about the level of American commitment. One example, Yolette of Randolph. I can't believe that Russia continues with their war. I have a lot of respect for the Ukrainian people and government. I'm sad about all the lost lives and suffering. However, I think that the Biden administration has given them a lot of money. There's so much need here in this country that's not being addressed. I think too much has been sent to Ukraine. It has to stop. The Ukrainian president may need to sit down with Putin and negotiate a way to stop the war. Not uncharacteristic, some of the other comments that we got as well. First, you know, your response to that, and is there a threshold where it's too much?
We certainly haven't reached it. I hear the concern. Let me address it on a couple of fronts. One, as I said, this is actually the highest return on national security dollars of the 21st century. I mean, you look at what we did in Afghanistan and Iraq, the trillions of dollars spent and the marginal returns at best. And here, for really about a tenth of our annual defense spending, we have significantly expanded the military capabilities of the West and our East Asian allies in regards and in proportion to the Russians' conventional military capacity. This has been a huge, huge rebalancing of military power towards NATO. Yes, there's need here in the United States, and we are addressing it. The funding of the last 2 years through infrastructure, science, domestic manufacturing, expanded and strengthened social safety nets. There are real costs to a fraying and an undermining of the rules-based international order. It sounds abstract. It sounds like a nebulous concept, but indeed it has been one of the key tenets of a huge expanse of the standards of living of so many people in the world over the last 70 years. And when we allow might to make right, when America turns its back on supporting freedom and democracy, we don't know where that thread ends up getting pulled to. But at this point, Ukraine can't sit down with Vladimir Putin. He's made very clear that he has a revanchist, blood and soil mission to devour Ukraine whole. And only the battlefield and facts on the ground can change his mind.
Jake Auchincloss, Congressman here in Massachusetts, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line. I'm going to bring a second voice in now, Olga Lisovska, who's a Ukrainian singer, an immigrant who came to the United States in the 1990s, now lives in Newton, Massachusetts, making her one of your constituents, Congressman. Olga, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
I want to note you've been sitting here in Studio 2 with me, and I think it's been hard to sit and listen to some of this for you.
Absolutely. It's a flashback to about a week before the war started. I was in the office with Jake Auchincloss, and I remember him saying when he was fresh out of the debriefing with the White House, and we asked him as a group of Ukrainian immigrants here, diaspora, asking, so what are the news? And I remember, Mr. Auchincloss, you said, not good. And I remember just this feeling of, you know, the sixth sense washing over me that something's not going to happen. So that's when I tried to talk my friends and family into, you know, taking a trip out of Ukraine just in case something's going to start. But nobody believed back then. And so 1 year later, and it's been just a year, but it feels like a century. Nothing is the same.
We talked to you right around that time. Did your family ever leave, or are they all still there?
So my brother is still there. All of my cousins and aunts are still there. My mom had a very adventurous and arduous journey. About a couple of weeks after the war started, she took a really difficult trip from Kiev by train to Lviv, from Lviv to Budapest, and actually was on the, while I was doing an interview with Jan Adams of New TV, I asked her, do you know anybody in Budapest? And she said, actually, as a matter of fact, I do. And somebody was right there to help her when she was passing through Budapest.
This is Newton Community Television. So this is just basically exactly. In your neighborhood.
Exactly.
So let's bring Congressman, jump back in. You hear Olga reflecting there on a moment with you that led to that phone call. Maybe it's time for a visit. Do you remember that time?
Oh, I remember it well. I'm reminiscing of that meeting in my Newton district office with Olga and a number of other members of the Ukrainian diaspora. And Olga, I remember I asked the group, and I said, will they fight? Because the war was coming. And I'll never forget, the response was three words, they will fight. And it has been proven true 1,000 times over.
How does it feel, Olga, a year later, 365 days later, to see, witness, talk back home to the fierce fighting on the ground that really has, I think, arguably defied what seems to be pretty much everyone's expectations except the expectations of the people of Ukraine?
Yes, I was actually surprised that the Americans would think that Ukrainians would not be defending their freedom, because it's just in our blood. We are such a proud nation. We are a peaceful nation. We love culture. We love education. That's where our main focus is. We're not imperialistic in nature. However, if you touch us, if you try to take our freedom away, you'd better, you will be sorry. So, a year later, I'm not surprised. This is exactly what I envisioned in terms of the resilience and the fight back from the Ukrainian people. However, I have to say that if it were not for the friends of Ukraine, especially the United States and the allies, this would not be possible.
So I'd like to stay with this idea. We're speaking with Olga Lazovska, who's a local Ukrainian singer, lives in Newton, Jake Auchincloss, Massachusetts congressman, of these American friends. And I want to do it on two levels. So Olga, I'm going to do the local level with you first. And then Congressman, I'm going to do the more meta level with you second. We have a strong local diaspora. Your community of Newton is a part of that. What has that response been like over the last year? And what's the most necessary thing to support the local diaspora today?
So I would say that diaspora has always been very proud of Ukrainian heritage. However, in the face of adversity, we came back stronger than ever together. We're so united, and we even had our first big Ukrainian festival that was held on the grounds of Boston University. It was in August. Over 3,000 people came, and it was just amazing to see all the support, people crying together, just strangers coming and hugging each other and sharing their stories, and people coming up to me even in the gym yesterday and saying, how can I get through to the American politicians about sending more arms to Ukraine. So it's the Ukrainian community and just the local community of Americans of all different nationalities. They're there to support Ukraine. And what's needed is that we need to listen more to our diaspora, and would love to have another conversation with you, Mr. Auchincloss.
So soon. Congressman, let me let you jump in there.
Well, my door is always open. I'm not the one we need to convince, though. I'm all in and will remain so because I know the importance, both moral and strategic. And although there is some fraying at the edges of bipartisan support for further aid to Ukraine, I want to reiterate that it remains robust. It is strong in both parties. And I do expect that we can pass another aid package this year. Yes, the hard right is increasingly vocal, but they remain a minority even within their own conference. And I do think Republican leadership is going to be able to rally votes to make it a still a strong bipartisan consensus.
So, Congressman, I'm glad you brought us to that level, because that's where I want to go next. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you two other submissions from people in our texting group. And I'll give you the question out of there. The first is from Joyce of East Falmouth. Joyce says, I truly believe if we don't help Ukraine, the world as we know it is over. Nothing will stop Putin. My heart is with the people there who are showing incredible strength and fortitude. And I'll stop there with that one. And then Leo of Cambridge. I applaud Congressman Auchincloss on his support of Taiwan in its existential struggle with communist China. How can America ensure that Taiwan doesn't become the next Ukraine? And what can Americans at home do to support these efforts? Now, we're talking about Ukraine today, but you just came back from Taiwan. My understanding is you got back sometime yesterday from this diplomatic mission. And this is happening in a larger context of a, I don't know if it's Cold War or not, but a lot of tension with China, who may be lining up on the other side here. What's the strategic imperative right now with Olga sitting in front of me, right, who's thinking about family and friends in country in Ukraine as we go forward under the brutal conditions you referred to?
I don't want to overextend the comparisons between Russia and China because they are vastly different countries and each need their own strategies. But both Putin and Xi Jinping are autocrats, and fundamentally they respect only strength. And people had better believe that Xi Jinping is watching on an hourly basis what happens with NATO's resolve in Ukraine, because it does affect his cost-benefit analysis on Taiwan. This is about demonstrating that we are willing to fight and uphold the liberal order. And so far, I think the depth of resolve has been impressive in the last year. However, the breadth, the width of that resolve has to me been disappointing. And what I mean by that is countries like India, Brazil, South Africa, Indonesia, major economies that could have been hugely important in the sanctions regime against Russia, in their diplomatic voice, have been either neutral or, in fact, actively sympathetic with Russia. And this needs to be a gut check for the United States. We need to do much more in our economic alliances with the global South to get them bought into this rules-based order, to let them see, to make them feel why it's so valuable to uphold, because clearly right now, they're not. And that's going to be absolutely critical vis-a-vis China and Taiwan. We need to take the Indo-Pacific economic framework, which encompasses everybody from Australia through India and Southeast Asia and East Asia, and knit those multilateral alliances closer together, not at the level of NATO, because that has been unique, but with deeper security and economic ties for sure, because America's strength in the next 10 years largely is going to be manifested through our alliances. This world is multipolar. We cannot act alone. We need to act with our friends, even though we're going to remain the largest power.
So I want to pick up that thread. And Olga Lisowska, I'll turn back to you. President Biden in Warsaw a few days ago, before the show, you and I were talking in the hall. You were sort of expressing wonder at his ability to just sort of pop up in Kyiv. Then he goes to Warsaw. Here's some sound from a speech that he made in Warsaw after the visit.
1 year ago, the world was bracing for the fall of Kyiv. Well, I just come from a visit to Kyiv, and I can report Kyiv stands strong. Kyiv stands proud. It stands tall. And most important, it stands free.
And I wanted to play that for this word free. And we heard Sofia Tarasuk at the top, who we're going to hear more from later in the show, talk about what you have or don't have when you have freedom. And we've just heard your congressman, Jake Auchincloss, talk about sort of this larger strategic imperative around a rules-based order that is, you know, rooted in the concepts of democracy and freedom. One, do you believe your country will stay free? And two, does it give you comfort to know that that battle is located in a larger struggle? Or is it frustrating to have a conflict that's so personal to you situated in a larger struggle?
Absolutely. I believe that Ukraine will be free. There is nothing that is going to come in the way of total victory for Ukraine. Everybody is supporting Ukraine, the Ukrainians, that's their goal and that's their mission in life. And if you stand for freedom, then you stand for Ukraine. And Ukraine in the last year has become synonymous with the fight for freedom, with resilience. And of course, listening to Jake Auchincloss talk about the larger structure of this whole
which I asked him alliance. To do.
Yes. It is, of course, very frustrating because you don't want your country to be in the middle of political struggles of bigger powers. But I don't think that's the case here. I think that's what Putin wants people to think, that Ukraine is just being used as a pawn by the United States, but it's definitely not what Ukrainians believe. We have an expression that true friends are, you recognize true friends when the adversity comes. And definitely this war has shown who our friends and who our enemies are. And we used to think of Russians as our neighbors and friends and even brothers. Well, that's changed now. They're no longer our brothers and definitely not very good neighbors. But the United States has shown that they are here for us in the time of need.
Congressman, last thought from you about sort of what's most important in the next couple of months in your role and your position.
Ukraine is likely to mount a counteroffensive in the spring, and I think the outcome of that counteroffensive cannot be overstated for how critical it is. We need to support Ukraine getting all the way to the sea and being able to cut off Russia's access to Crimea as the end of the beginning, I guess I would say, so that we can move on to a stage where Ukraine can start to actually retake Crimea and the Donbass. I think this counteroffensive and its success is pivotal.
That is Massachusetts Congressman Jake Auchincloss. Congressman, I appreciate you joining us fresh off that trip to Taiwan. I'm going to say goodbye to you there. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
So now, Olga, as we finish this conversation, we're going to do it a little bit differently because you're going to sing for us a minute. But to do so, I want to play a bit of an NPR reporter, Joanna Kakissis, on Morning Edition this morning.
Just think about how different this city was a year ago. It was so vibrant and full of life. And now many residents of the city are dead. Many others are refugees. Others are on the front line fighting.
And that fighting is what's on my mind because you chose, you're going to sing us out to the end of the segment today. I'm going to say goodbye to you and then you're going to sing. You wanted to sing a song called How Can I Not Love You, My Kyiv, which you tell us is considered the anthem of Kyiv. Is that right?
That's correct.
And why did you want to sing that today?
Well, it's my home city. I have the most wonderful memories. My family is still there. And this song is about how beautiful it is and how peaceful it is. And I want this to be a prophetic song that very soon we'll see Kyiv come back to its beautiful self.
So we'll close with that. Olga Lisovska here in Studio 2 singing for us, How Can I Not Love You, My Kyiv. Olga, thank you.
Грає море зелене, тихий день добра. Дорогими для мене стали схили Дніпра. Де колишуться віти закоханих мрій, як тебе не любити, Києве мій. Спить натомлене місто тихим лагідним сном. Ген вогні, як намисто, розцвіли над Дніпром. Вечорів оксамити мовчить.